The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello again, I'm Stephen Scott and this is The Weekly Connect. You can join the conversation right here on the programme every single week. It is your show where we talk about the issues that matter to you if you live with sight loss. This week we continue the conversation started last week on blind dating. What's the challenges? What is it we're actually wanting from a partner? A very interesting discussion and your views ahead. Also, more on audio description. Lots of you in touch about this, really highlighting the fact that it is such a valued service. And we meet the first blind rapper from the States that's got the whole world talking. That's all to come on The Weekly Connect this week.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
First, though, we follow on from last week's discussion on dating and getting into relationships. Lots of you in touch about this one. Answering our question last week, is it possible to catch someone's eye if you can't see?
To answer your question, is it possible to catch someone's eye? It is, as long as they tell you when they're taking the plastic eye out and when they're going to throw it, then you've got half a chance of catching it. Otherwise, it's very difficult.
Okay, very funny. Tell us your dating stories, Mystery Man.
Dating stories. I'm obviously happily married now and have wonderful dates with my darling wifelet. But prior to that, I was an inhabitant or a lurker or a user of eHarmony for a little while and some other dating sites as well. But I never seem to get much luck on the other ones. So I have, you know, most of the online dates I had on eHarmony were kind of neither here nor there. Met the person, had a drink, you know. Nothing particularly good, nothing particularly awful, but never texted again. But I have two extremes I'll mention here. One was I went to meet a lady. We were going to just meet up for a coffee in her town, spend the day, and I was planning to head back that night. I ended up leaving 3 days later. It didn't last particularly, but I was there a little longer than I'd intended. The opposite end of that spectrum was I met someone in a pub. We really weren't hitting it off. I probably knew it wasn't going to go very well when sort of discussing hobbies, and she said she quite liked collecting teddy bears. I thought we were probably time limited. I knew we were time limited when a casual acquaintance came in, threw an avuncular arm around my shoulder and said, "Ah, is this your woman?" And then I think after about two drinks, I said, what are we going to do? Do you want another one? And she said she wanted to go home, which is how I felt too. Going to a separate home, I hasten to add, not a home with her. But now, as I say, happily married, so the sort of the dating scene is long behind me. But those
better
are,
be.
It certainly is wifey. But those are my little dating stories. Oh, and there was the one when I was on a holiday. I won't name the company that runs it, but it's a company that offers blind holiday makers holidays with sighted guides. And there was a little in holiday dating thing going on there, but that was just a typical holiday romance. But yes, as I say, all many years behind me now.
Okay, thank you for that. By the way, he didn't want his name mentioned. That's why we've now given him the title of Mystery Man. Sounds like he's glad his dating days are over, though, and his sight loss has got nothing to do with that. Now, two people who wanted to talk to us this week and will let us say their names are Andrea Hope and Diane Marks from Northern Ireland. And they bring an added dimension to our conversation we started last week. As well as both of them being blind, they are also gay. But does that bring an added challenge to finding love, or does it make the challenge more fun? Both Andrea and Diane are on the line now. Thanks for being here, guys.
That's a pleasure.
No worries at all.
Lovely to talk to you both and to talk to you about relationships. And obviously last week it was Valentine's Day, and as lovely as Valentine's Day is, we thought we'd continue the theme here on The Weekly Connect this week by talking to you lovely people. The reason being because we were actually hoping to get you on last week's show because of your story, which is very interesting. You both met because of your guide dogs.
We did.
So tell me more. How did that come about?
Okay, well, in 2013, we were both at an awards ceremony in London. It was a guide dog awards ceremony. Diane had been nominated for Breaking Down Barriers, and I had nominated my guide dog for Outstanding Work. And what had actually happened was we were in the same travel lodge. It was the Pimlico. And we had come down some steps and my dog saw her dog, sort of went over to him, and that was them two sorted. And then we got talking. And then I suppose in that way the rest is history. So that's how we got together. And now our two previous guide dogs are now retired together in the countryside here in Northern Ireland.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That is nice, actually. So not just you two actually got together, but the dogs found love as well.
They did.
They did, yeah. And my dog really wasn't fussed about other dogs, but she liked Thomas.
That's interesting, so, isn't it? That's really interesting. So, you know, Diane, when you think about love, I guess, and you think about love at first sight, do we just hand it now over to the guide dogs and let them do it for us? Is that how it works?
Oh,
now?
Well, are they the better matchmakers than most of us, I think. But love between people who are totally blind, like Andrea and myself, can be an incredibly difficult thing to find. You know, sight adds so much at first appearance. But I tend to think, well, if it's not going to happen, it's not going to happen. And it did. So we were really lucky.
And what was your experiences before, both of you? I mean, did you have difficulty finding other people, finding relationships? Was that a challenge before?
It is, because, you know, unless you're a very outgoing person who's blind and you are kind of on the scene and you're able to sort of find other people who will accept you for who you are, it can be really tricky to find a partner. I mean, I always said I didn't want another blind partner, but here I am, 3 years on, pretty much. And I mean, but to be honest, you know, I suppose the difficulty is being out there and meeting people. I mean, getting involved with your LGBT community is probably a good way. But again, it can be really difficult because there can be a barrier between blind and sighted people in terms of how they communicate, how they communicate with verbal and nonverbal body language, for example. You know, and that blind people miss out on a lot of that. So it is actually very difficult. I mean, I certainly struggled. I had a couple of blind partners before Diane, but they never lasted long.
It's because you were too demanding, darling.
Yeah. But it was more because it just, you know, just stuck there, immature. But it's not so much that. It was just, it is difficult. And unless you're in a lucky position, unless you're in the right place at the right time like we were, then, you know, it can be really hard.
Is it more of a challenge being gay and visually impaired?
Yes. Yeah, it is. Because it's bad enough when you're straight and you're visually impaired.
Trying to find a partner.
But when you're gay, and that's very much frowned upon here in Northern Ireland, and to have a disability like being blind or partially sighted, yeah, it's not easy. Really not easy. I mean, I lived in Brighton for 15 years, and I was only just starting to come out sort of on the scene when I met the missus here. And it was definitely, you could feel there was this barrier between you and a sighted gay woman. They just didn't know how to approach you or what to say or anything like that.
I mean, there are some gay people out there who are blind, who are very, very outgoing, very sure of themselves, and they're able to mingle with sighted people, no problem. But it depends on your confidence level, and it just depends on you as a person, you know, because it's as difficult or as easy as you make it, but it's the difficulty is meeting other people and being out there and, you know, sort of interacting with them.
So, you know, it's interesting. We've had this conversation with a few people who've been in touch with the programme, privately in some cases, who haven't wanted to come on and talk about it. And I find that quite interesting. you know, one guy in particular I remember speaking to, he's gay, and he said, you know, I really struggle to meet people. And he talks about the challenges of what is quite a superficial world which exists among what he found in the male gay community. Is that the same with females? Is that the case?
I wouldn't say the women are as superficial. The women are more intense. They more emotional, more wanting something to last. The gay men from the gay male friends that I have and have had, they seem to be more out for a party. You know, they're not interested, certainly the young ones are not interested in settling down or being monogamous or being, you know, true to their partner. And this is what I've encountered.
So that experience would stack up then, but by what you're saying. I mean, we can't generalize here. I mean, that would be ridiculous.
You can't.
I mean,
no.
You know, of course, not every guy is out there to be monogamous and out with everybody he can find, and neither's every woman. And, you know, everyone is different in that respect, and that is fair to say. But certainly he's found that in his experience. That was what he was relaying to me. But I think he's probably going to places where, you know, clubs, for example, where, you know, guys are out and women are out who, you know, are looking for fun, and that's fine. But it must be a challenge, because you've got two barriers to get over. First of all, it's identifying someone, because, you know, you tell me, I mean, you know this world better than me, but is it still hard to meet someone, to ask that question of someone, you know, to find out if that person you're talking to is in fact gay?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you wouldn't just be able to walk up to somebody and have a chat and say, well, by the way, are you gay, you know, unless you really built up a good rapport with them in a certain amount of time. Sometimes you can tell. Sometimes you just have that gaydar radar, as we call it.
It just clicks on, and you know.
Yeah. But it
but you don't have
difficult.
The visual, that's the thing. You have no visual.
It's not a visual, but it's like a sensation that you can kind of get, because a lot of sighted people don't realise how much they give off in terms of how they act, what they say, how they are around you. You know, there's different things that you can pick up on, and you know.
They're very obvious about their non-verbal body language. Mm. Very obvious. And you can pick up a lot, a hell of a lot, when you can't see. And somebody who's gay gives off certain signals, certain vibes, the way they dress, what they wear, what they wear with regards to perfume, aftershave, that kind of thing. You can just tell.
And sometimes it's in the voice.
And that's not the effeminate voice. It's just the way they speak
their tone, or the tone, that kind of thing, you know.
So you can tell a lot from that. That's interesting. And isn't it interesting that as blind people we tend to look for those things? And actually, in some respects, there's a deeper relationship that develops with people, because you are looking into things that, you know, anyone who's in a club on a Saturday night, straight or gay, you know, it's just sort of looking across a room and saying, oh, she's nice or he's nice.
Well, yeah. The thing is, in our position, you can no longer judge a book by its cover. So you have to, in a shorter period of time, almost, what's the word, speed date, really.
Yeah.
To get to know anything, or even get any kind of feedback or sensation about the person you're talking to.
I mean, personally, I don't know that clubs are the right place, because they're so loud.
Yeah.
And trying to get around is bad enough. I think social groups and smaller things like that are better, because you're more likely to meet people that are, you know, similar to you, and you can get chatting with. Whereas clubs, I think people want to party, people want to dance, drink and all that stuff. And it's good fun. But I think if you're wanting to try and get out there and maybe find someone who's on a level with you, to be able to have a really proper conversation with them from the outset, I think you need to actually be involved with or go to places that are not so busy, smaller social groups, men's, you know, men, you can get men's gay groups. I mean, there are meetup groups that you can join. I mean, we're part of a meetup group called Deja Vuvu here. It's for lesbian LGBT ladies. And we're a part of that. And we've met some lovely ladies, you know, and we've gone on a walk with them. We've, you know, had a coffee morning with them. And sometimes things like that are the better places to go if you want to not just find someone, but to meet people who are like you, to make friends. Because sometimes, at least if you've got friends who are like-minded, that is a step in the right direction.
How important is the word community here? Because, you know, we talk about community so much. And, you know, let's be honest about it. While we don't define ourselves in our lives as blind or partially sighted people, and you would never define yourselves as gay first, or, you know, that's just not how we define ourselves. Mm-hmm. Other people do. And I think it's often the case that community becomes part of it. Is there something good, though, about, in your case, being part of those two communities, partially sighted people and gay people?
Well, absolutely. I think so, because we get the best of both worlds. You know, we're amongst a group of like-minded people who understand us, who understand the difficulties, the stresses, etc., that we go through being gay. But then we also belong to a blind community. Well, I suppose community is the wrong word, but blind world, where we face similar challenges to other visually impaired and blind people around the world. And we all have experiences which we can lend.
But it is interesting. So, Andrea said earlier that, you know, you never really wanted to end up with someone who was blind.
And no, I found that because quite sometimes you feel like you're mothering that person, especially if you're a very, very independent person. And you're trying to do your thing, and the partner you're with is like expecting you to give them everything. It's like
hanging on.
I'm your girlfriend, not your mum.
Yeah.
If you want that relationship, then
are you listening to that?
Sounds like a two-way street in your world.
But no, I mean, it's just it can be frustrating sometimes, especially when we're very independent people. We try to do what we can. Mm. We, you know, and then you get people that are, say they are, but they're not, or they're, you know, they're not really, but, and they expect everything to be done for them. And that's kind of why I didn't want another blind partner, because I thought, well, I'm not going to find one who's on that same wavelength as me. I'm not going to find someone who's actually, like, independent, who, you know, that kind of thing. So that's why I sort of said I didn't want another blind partner. And also, yeah, being part of the blind world is good, but it has its disadvantages as well. Like everything does. Sometimes the gay community can be a little bit OTT with, you know, their sexual orientation and putting it down people's throats. And again, you need to find a level ground. You know, you need to just find an in-between that's right and that fits, and that's where it can be difficult. But they can be good, again, as Diane was saying, because especially meeting like-minded people like yourself who you can just identify with and just relax with and have a bit of crack, as we say here in Northern Ireland.
Public attitude is a big problem for blind and partially sighted people. It's probably one of the top topics that comes up every single time I have a conversation with anybody on this programme, or indeed outside. I'm partially sighted myself, and I know the a lot of the challenges that exist with this. And it's always interesting to me that, you know, public attitude comes top because there is so much lack of awareness out there. Add to that, you guys are gay. Do you face discrimination? Do you face
not really? Do we?
Well, we haven't really encountered it, but we obviously can't see people's faces when, say, for example, I kiss her in the street, and we can't really see people's reactions. So we just go on the fact, it's accepted, unless somebody says something.
I mean, we get a lot of, for example, over here, I mean, if you ask somebody, look, would you help me to this place or that place? They will actually, you know, they'll go out of their way to help you, even if they're not actually
going that way.
They'll more than happily do it. And I think it's also down to how you ask them, because again, some people are very uncertain about offering help because of the attitudes of us. You know, sometimes we don't have the best attitude when somebody offers you help. And we're like, no, I'm fine. You know, we can be quite abrupt as well. And that's because we don't want our independence taken away from us. But at the same time, if we react like that, there's another blind or partially sighted person that really does need that help. And that person, sighted person, is very unsure about offering the help because of their previous experience. So I think it's a mixed bag of us and them. And we always, if we don't need help, we'll say thanks for offering, we're fine. Or, you know, if we ask for help, we're really good about it. And, you know, we make sure that the person is always appreciated and stuff like that, you know. And I think, you know, that goes a long way.
But it also helps, I think, in the fact that we don't just stick to the blind world.
No.
We actually are involved with volunteering for other arts organizations. We work quite heavily from a voluntary point of view with guide dogs, with the RNIB. I'm working with the city council trying to set something up through them. You know, we're out there. We're trying to integrate into society, for want of a better term. Mm. We're not living in this blind bubble. You know, we're trying to be part of the rest of the world because essentially that's what the public wants. They want us to be part of the world. They don't want to see us being mollycoddled, wrapped in cotton wool, treated like a, oh, shame, poor blind person. Because we're not. We're perfectly, perfectly capable of getting out there and doing anything we put our minds to.
And public perception is going to be what they see.
Absolutely.
If they see somebody going, oh, there, now, blind kid. And this person's in their 30s. And that they're calling a blind kid. You know, public perception is going to really take on that. And they're going to see us as vulnerable, poor people when a lot of us aren't. And a lot of us say are trying to find work, things like that, which is difficult enough as it is. So, you know, public perception is important, and we have to be that ambassador to ensure that the public see us the way we deserve to be seen, not how people tend to see us or have seen us, you know.
So whether it's life or whether it's love, it's, in your view, get yourself out there and get confident.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, confidence is a difficult one. I'm not as confident as my missus is here, but you find your way through things. I mean, I really think the meetup groups, as I've said before, you can get it on your iPhone, it's called a meetup, and you can look through as to what suits you, what you like.
For your area.
And if people, you know, look at things like that, that is a good way to meet people and get interacting with people because, you know, it's... These seem to be taking off quite a bit now. And I mean, we've become really lucky in being part of this LGBT group that we're with.
But we're also politically involved with the LGBT community. You know, we belong to a political party over here. We're part of
the steering group.
The LGBT steering group. You know, we're getting involved because we want to see things change over here as well. And we become more and more exposed to other people of the same community. And they also learn from us because there's a lot to be done, far more so than Scotland, Wales and England, around accessibility and equality here in Northern Ireland. And so we're working within the same group of people, whether it's blind or whether it's LGBT, and we're making ourselves known. And this is what's starting to make the difference.
And a lot of the public are actually, you know, accepting of us because we don't push it down their throats.
No, we don't.
But we don't do anything differently. We're just a normal couple. A lot of people say, oh, you're such a lovely couple. You're such a, you know, a fan. And a lot of people have commented on what a fantastic couple we are. And it's just because we are who we are. We don't sort of go OTT about who we are. We don't sort of make a point of being gay, but we act like a normal couple. Mm. And that's what it should all be about as well.
to the outside community, people who know us in the area that we live, if they didn't know any better, we would just look like two friends living together.
Mm.
And that's how we handle it. We're not, you know, all funny about it or OTT or pushing it down people's throats or jumping up and down on the equalities bandwagon and all this. We're just who we are and people accept us for it.
I mean, you know, whenever we're speaking to each other in public, it'll be, all right, love, or babes, or... So they know we're a couple.
Mm.
But it's a natural thing for us to do that. We don't change who we are outside our four walls to who we are when we're inside. You know, we are who we are, and that's how we, you know, we stay the same regardless. And
invariably, it's not us they're talking to, it's the dogs.
Well,
yeah, we're just on the end of the leash.
I did want to say that. Yeah, the dogs probably attract the most attention of everything else. It's like, oh, yeah, yeah, you're gay, that's fine. What about the dogs? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been fantastic speaking to you both, and thank you for being so open and talk about your world, and you know, some great advice that you offer as well. Diane and Andrea, thanks for joining us on the Weekly Connect.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you very much.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect
on RNIB Connect Radio.
If it's on your mind, it should be on this programme. No subject is ignored or considered taboo. We discuss it all here on the Weekly Connect. If you want to talk about it, then come on and tell us what you want to say. Lots more to come, including a chat with the first blind rapper that's taking the world by storm. And fancy recording your thoughts in a nice new cheap voice recorder? Well, one of you has been in touch to tell us about the new MicroSpeak recorders. Grab a cuppa. We're back in two.
RNIB. Supporting people with sight loss.
Reading is essential to feeling included and independent, but when experiencing sight loss, gaining access to the same magazines and newspapers as your peers can be a challenge. RNIB Newsagent can remove those barriers. Whether you're interested in the daily papers, Reader's Digest or BBC Good Food, our service can deliver a wide range of popular titles in formats to suit you. Prices start from just £25 a year, and if you pay by direct debit, we'll give you a 20% discount. To find out more and request a copy of our new catalogue or sample magazine, please call RNIB's helpline on 0303 123 9999.
RNIB's online shop now offers the opportunity to read and leave product reviews, a great tool for everyone when buying online. With a clean design and layout, we're open online 24 hours a day, every day. So join the thousands using the site already and try it for yourself. Visit rnib.org.uk/shop.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks for joining us. Now, from sight loss to the stage, the last 12 months have been a bit of a roller coaster ride for 19-year-old Ant Walker. Our Barry Snell caught up with the aspiring rapper to find out more about her remarkable journey.
Rap music in the past has been used as a voice for the inner city struggle. Now, though, one young woman is using it as a way to express the journey of her own sight loss. 19-year-old Ant Walker suffers from optic atrophy and recently lost the sight in her second eye, which rendered her completely blind. But rather than let this hold her back, Ant has used it as a motivation to not only help herself, but others too. I caught up with the aspiring rapper and began by asking her how it feels to be doing interviews with radio stations like ourselves on the other side of the Atlantic.
It is interesting, actually. And it's exciting to know that I have fans all the way across the Atlantic.
Your life is really taking off at the minute, and we're going to talk about your music shortly, but can you take me back to when you first started losing your sight?
Yes. Well, I started losing my sight at the age of 11. I started losing my sight in my left eye first, and it all started, I had a cold, and then soon after my cold cleared up, my vision began to be spotty and blurry, and I didn't know why or what was causing it. So my parents started taking me to different doctors, and they couldn't figure out what was causing it. So we kind of just, you know, learned to cope with me just losing sight in one eye.
Yeah.
Life was fine. And then shortly, I say about 6 years after the end of 2016, I started having some of the same complications in my right eye that I was having in my left eye. So I told my mom, and, you know, she told me that we'll go to different doctors and we've seen different neurologists and such, but no one could seem to figure out what was causing it. And doctors were beginning to tell me that, you know, there wasn't anything else that they could do, and they felt as though that it was all in my head. And, you know, I was imagining things because they wasn't seeing anything in their test results. So they kind of just, you know, referred me to different doctors. And by the time I got to see the different doctors, they had said that my vision has decreased so bad that there wasn't anything that they could do to change it. And I should just, you know, start preparing myself to eventually go blind. So over the course of a couple of months, my vision decreased and it just continued to decrease. And then on December 25th of 2015, Christmas Day, I woke up and I couldn't see anything.
And how did it feel to be told by people that are professional people that you're imagining things? I guess that must have been horrendous for you.
Yeah, it kind of made me feel like, you know, why aren't you believing what I'm saying? Mm. And I'm the one that's going through it. You know, it kind of made me feel like they were using that as an excuse because they didn't have any answers to give me.
Now, from 12 until your second eye started to deteriorate, did you continue at mainstream school?
Yeah, I was fine. I just had to wear glasses for reading, but they said that my other eye was fine and there wasn't anything wrong.
What was that experience like to suddenly go fully blind?
In the beginning, I felt like I wasn't quite ready because it was so new. So I kind of withdrew a lot from, you know, things and, you know, kind of stayed to myself because it was all brand new. It was really hard.
What were your friends like?
Some friends were supportive because they were there with me through the whole process. And some friends, they were kind of distant because they were just confused and didn't understand how it happened and what happened. And I guess they couldn't figure out a way to comfort me and what to say. So they kind of, you know, were rude about it. Some would try taking my mobility cane and, you know, calling me names and, you know, things of that sort. But some were very supportive.
And that would have been your lowest point when you were having problems with friends and trying to get used to this blindness?
Yeah. Yeah, it was really hard.
So when you were rock bottom, you suddenly realised you had a talent for music, didn't you?
Yeah. When I was at my lowest point, I tend to come home and turn on my headphones and just tune the world out and listen to music and listen to different songs and listen to different beats. And then, you know, somehow along that path, I just came to find that music was my calling. And I wanted to let the world know about my story, and I wanted to tell them in a way that everyone could enjoy it. And I was a big writer before I went blind. So I kind of, you know, I felt like music was another way for me to express how I was feeling in a different avenue to, you know, outlet.
Now, you've written two songs, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Writing two songs. The first one is Count Your Blessings and the second one is Team Ant.
Well, what we're going to do, we're going to have a listen to some of Count Your Blessings just now, okay? So do you want to introduce it?
Okay. This is Young Ant, and you're listening to Count Your Blessings.
I'm going to take you back to the year 09. That's the year I went blind up in my left eye. I was like 51 when I hit the scene. I ain't really tripped, though, because the kicker still see. Pop said, it's time to take it. They don't know what trigger it is, so it's time to face it. So I switched it up, hopped on some cool stuff. Fast for about 6 years, them saying, man, what is this? I said, Mama, I think I'm going through the same thing.
She said, calm down, baby girl,
cause you can handle this. I said, nah, Mom, take me to neurologist. They ran all of these tests and everything was negative. They said, internet, it's in your imagination. I'm like, what you saying? I know what I'm facing. They sent me home, I started popping pills and tweaking. A couple hours late, I broke brand new to sleep. I was broke down, stressing the pops. Told me, count your blessings. Hey, don't get it wrong.
Don't get it wrong.
I'm in my zone.
That was awesome. That was the Young Ant there with Count Your Blessings. Hear a lot of rap and hip-hop music. A lot of it is quite self-indulgent, singing about how much you have, how much bling, etc., etc. Yours is the complete opposite from that. It's very inspiring. Was that a conscious decision?
Yes, I actually wanted to write a book about my life. And when I got in tune with music, it kind of all came together. And I'm a big fan of rap and hip hop. I grew up listening to it. And, you know, my style of rap is more motivational. I call myself a motivational rapper because, like you say, you know, my style is different from what you hear on the radio. I'm aiming towards mainly motivating and inspiring everyone and others and being the face for the blind and visually impaired community to show that we can be whatever we want to be despite our disability or our diagnosis. We can do whatever we want to be.
So we heard Count Your Blessing, that was your first one, but you've also done another song as well. What's that one called and what is the inspiration behind that?
My second song is called Team Ant, and it totally goes out to all my supporters, all my fans, and everyone who's been there with me through my journey, helping me through it. And it's basically about, you know, me showing love to my fans and all the love that they show in return.
Now, since writing Count Your Blessings, you've had a lot of attention, haven't you? Can you tell our listeners about some of the things that have been happening to you, Ant?
Since writing my first song, I've been getting noticed. I've been getting, you know, fans saying how they're inspired and how they're touched and how I've changed their life and inspired them to, you know, keep going through whatever they're going through. And I have had a couple of opportunities to perform my song at a couple of shows. I've opened up for a up-and-coming rap artist, and in March I'll be doing a couple of shows. I'll be doing a show in Austin, Texas in March, and I'll be doing a show in Atlanta, Georgia.
It must be helping your confidence as well as a person and as a blind person.
Yeah, I've never dreamed of this much attention and these many people, you know, loving my word and my message. And it feels good.
If there's anybody listening, Ant, that's in a similar position to yourself that may be losing their sight or have just lost their sight, what advice would you give to them?
The advice that I would give to them is don't let society bring you down and don't stop following your dreams just because you're losing your sight. That should motivate you and give you the strength to keep going and hold your head high because the sky is the limit and anything is possible. And just always remember to count your blessings.
If anyone wants to listen to your music, what platforms can they do so on?
They can find me on YouTube at Young Ant. They can find me on SoundCloud, Twitter, and Instagram at Young Ant 1121. And they can find me on Facebook at hashtag Team Ant.
Ant Walker, best of luck for the future. Thank you for talking to us.
Thank you. It's been an honor.
Interesting story. And if you want to comment on anything you've heard here on the programme, maybe a story that you feel strongly about, something you want to tell us your thoughts on, or you have a story to tell, just like Ant's there, that you think is rather unusual that you might want to tell other people about, that shows that blind and partially sighted people really can do pretty much anything they want, within reason, of course. Well, get in touch. theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk is our email address. Another story that has drawn quite a lot of attention in the past couple of weeks and you've been getting in touch about is audio description, and in particular the news from the government that they're pushing forward with legislation that means we will soon see on-demand services forced to include audio description as standard alongside live TV channels. Now, clearly, this is a great news story, but what it has done, perhaps more importantly than anything else, is highlight how important audio description is in people's lives. And lots of you have been in touch to talk about this. One such person is on the line. Davinda is from London and joins me now. Davinda.
Hi, Stephen. How you doing?
Good, thank you. Thanks for getting in touch. What's your thoughts on audio description then?
So for me, a bit of background of the condition, which is progressively getting worse, and I've gone from being able to see the screen through to now not seeing the screen so clearly. So audio description basically has become a bit of a lifeline for me because, you know, I remember watching films that you may have seen yourself, Stephen, that, you know, they have twists and turns, lots of detail. Mm. And I remember, actually, if I visually remember some of those good films, it's like fantastic. If I now think about watching that movie now without audio description, none of the information I would have missed is phenomenal to think about. So for me, audio description, I think it's a must. It's a lifeline.
It's interesting you use that word lifeline, because, you know, a lot of people might think, well, how is television a lifeline?
Well, because there's a conception and a misconception that blind people don't watch TV, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. It's like, wow, you watch television. Wow, who'd have thought?
Yeah. No, it's common. I hear a lot of people, friends, family, say to me, actually, you know, why is it? Because the thing is, it's entertaining. It's, you could argue it's escapism. I think one of your callers last week was mentioning about it's also contextual in terms of education.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it has a range of things. But what I think as well is there's a misconception in terms of saying, well, actually, lifeline in terms of, well, if I want to access the material and it's available on television, it's wanting to feel just as comfortable sitting around the family and being able to access all the information just like anyone else. One of the things that's really important to me, because when I'm around the family, is I want to be able to just relax and enjoy the content. And one of the big challenges you find, especially when you're with sighted and non-sighted people, is if audio description's on, I've had it where people who are sighted, and you know what this is like, possibly, Stephen, it's like severe, it interrupts their pleasure. Maybe.
It's a nuisance for them. Yeah, it's a nuisance for them.
So I don't know if you remember, Stephen, actually, there was a trial we did last year, actually. I think it was in RNIB, that the movie reading trial. I don't know if you were part of that one.
Oh, yeah, heard of that.
Yeah. Now, coming from a slightly techie point of view here, what I loved about that particular delivery, because one of the things about audio description that I found is the way it's delivered. Now, I've gone to the cinema, I've gone through some really bulky headphones, and they've hurt my ears within about half an hour, and it just gets to a point where you think, you know, I'm not really enjoying this, but I'll do it, because the only way I'm going to consume this movie thoroughly is to have the audio description, but the hardware is not so great. Sometimes the volume levels on broadcast television isn't quite great. You know, you can watch a program which is really mixed so that the program is one level, all of a sudden the narrator's just shouting at you. But for the first time at home, I remember watching, through that trial, a delivery where I had the audio description track, movies playing, and I had full control. And I was sitting there thinking, about, what volume do I want this on? I could have it on a nice, moderate level, family can have it loud, and it didn't disturb them. And there was one added bonus I remember, actually. Now, this is the first time that happened to me at home, because being a bit of an audio enthusiast and a movie buff, I thought, well, you know, I set myself up with a home theater at home. But what happens with most of these services, when you switch on audio description, it does what they call a down mix. It puts everything from 5.1 into 2.1. And also I'm losing the kind of benefit of the product I purchased, which is a home theater, because I have to listen to audio description this way. So for the first time, actually, it made me appreciate that actually having just my own headphones synced to the standard content that was produced for everyone and be personal and private, but get my 5.1 was amazing.
So it really has made a difference to you. And that movie reading trial you're talking about, just for people who don't know, that was a trial where, and as you say, it was an app on your phone and you could download the audio track, the audio description track, and that would play, as you say, in your own earphones or your own earbuds, and you'd watch the film, which didn't have audio description on it at that point. So if you were sitting with friends and family, that annoyance was taken away. Because I find this, you know, I get this all the time. You know, I can't sit with my family and watch a movie, because my wife and I are both visually impaired, so we have the audio description on for us. When we go around to my mum's house, she doesn't like the audio description, so we don't put it on, and it's an annoyance. You know,
it is.
Because she always says, oh, then I know what's happening before it happens, which is true.
Close your eyes, close your ears, just see that coming.
But it's such a useful thing, you know, and it's interesting. Someone said to me once, and I kind of tend to agree with this, I wonder if you do, that if a TV program or a movie doesn't have audio description, you won't watch it.
Okay, that's an interesting one. I think for me it's context. I think I will if I know it's going to be something that's dialogue heavy. If I think it's going to be something that I can mix maybe what I hear on screen with what potentially might be a lesser, I mean, let's say if it's got a lot of the kind of dialogue where I think you get a lot of programs. If I can use some of the BBC programs as an example, like Dragon's Den, they have an audio description version, but its impact is probably less than a documentary where there's descriptions of mountains, scenes, animals. Contextually, what what's going on the screen is going to be much higher. So I think it depends on context.
Okay, so for example, if Coronation Street didn't have AD, you wouldn't be overly fussed about it.
truth be told, Stephen, I don't watch Coronation Street, so with or without AD, that's probably not going to happen.
Well, we're not going to be friends if you talk like that, Devinda. But, you know, it's great that it's there. And, you know, we are actually very lucky in this country because the numbers of audio description on television is actually pretty high. And I must admit, I've noticed that more and more programmes have got it. One thing, though, we were talking about last week was the audio description on demand, which is a lot less available out there. I mean, Netflix have done it, and let's be honest, Netflix have done really well with it. And, you know, I cannot praise them enough. Anytime a new Netflix original series pops up, I can watch it because I know it's going to be audio described. And not just audio described, but audio described blooming well, frankly.
It is.
But, you know, ITV, and I know they're getting there with it, and BBC and others. I mean, well, BBC's not done too badly. It does put audio description up and it's on demand. Not everything, and not all the full series like you get on the sort of standard iPlayer. What's your thoughts on all of this? Do you think that you welcome more of that, or are you quite happy with the linear approach?
I personally am really happy with the approach, especially with on demand, because Stephen, you and I both know, we're all busy, lifestyles changed. Gone are the days where we probably all sat down in front of a box watching something live as a nation.
Yeah.
I think culture's taken us towards a way where we're all thinking, actually, I've got XYZ priorities. Let me record a program or let me download it from a server, and whatever service we choose. And I think as a result, it's really important that the availability of AD keeps up with that culture change, because if it doesn't, what then happens is we get a divide between where cultures move towards, and then the barrier and the exclusion becomes that our enjoyment is dropped, because that linear mode we talk about, or that linear model of delivery, has kept us in something that isn't appropriate for us anymore, really. So I actually wholeheartedly think it's a great move forward. My only hope and request in moving forward with this stuff is that I think it's also important, because I've mentioned this before, because I go to the theatre and we go to different areas where audio description is, because audio description isn't just for me on TV, it's all-encompassing now. I think it's really important the companies think about how they deliver this, because one of the things that hasn't quite moved forward as quick as I'd maybe hope, and I guess my expectations may be a bit high, but it's things like where we do downloads. At the moment, you can stream a programme on BBC, and it's great. You know, you can sit there, you can watch it, but if I'm doing a train journey, say, Stephen, I'm coming down from London to see yourself up in North, I'm thinking, great, I've got a few hours to kill, let me download some programmes.
Yeah.
But they won't have AD on them.
A lot more to be done about it, clearly. And, we hope that the fight continues. We know it's ongoing. The legislation's going through Parliament. And while that usually sends me to sleep when I hear things about that, this one actually is quite interesting. So we watch
it
with interest. Devinda, good to talk to you.
Likewise. Thanks, Stephen, for your time.
This is The Weekly Connect, and you can get in touch. You can email us at any time, theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. You can also get in touch on Twitter at RNIB Radio using the hashtag TheWeeklyConnect. Now, there's another way you can get in touch with us. You can email with this. And lots of you out there are keen to do it. That is, record your own audio. Now, it could be your own podcast you want to make, or do your own interviews, either for your own enjoyment or perhaps so you can get in touch and share your thoughts with The Weekly Connect. Of course, to do that, you need to have some kind of kit, don't you? You need something to record on. Well, one of our listeners has been in touch to tell us about one such device she has found that's not only very cheap, but it's effective, and most importantly, it's fully accessible. Here's Julie Roddaway from Liverpool.
Welcome to MicroSpeak, a very simple but effective voice recorder. This is a very nice recorder indeed, really beautiful quality. Files are recorded in mono WAV format, but the quality is superb. The recorder is made of a very durable solid plastic, you'll hear it in my hand, can easily fit into your pocket. If you hold it so that the speaker is at the top, below the speaker is a long red bar, and this is the record button, and all you do is press the record button and then wait for a bleep and start speaking. Below the record button is an LCD display, below which there are three buttons. There is, on the far left, rewind, next is pause and play, and next to that is the next button. The great thing about this little device is that it's accessible. On the bottom there is a switch, and if you slide it to the left, this is what happens.
Ready. Battery high.
So I'm going to press the record button now. So you've heard the bleep. The recorder has bleeped at me. And I believe there are visual indications to show that the recording is being made as well. To stop the recording, I just press the record button again. You hear a series of bleeps. This indicates that the recording has been saved. I'm going to play that now by pressing the play button. So you've heard the bleep. The recorder has bleeped at me. And I believe... I'm going to stop that. Now, if I want to erase that recording, I just press and hold the play button down and you'll hear what happens.
Delete file, yes or no?
And I press the previous button or the rewind button to say yes and it bleeps to confirm and you press the play button again.
File deleted.
If you want to skip through messages, if you press play and you hear recording you don't want, just press either the rewind or the fast forward button to skip through each message. There is a USB port on the bottom of the recorder and this charges the lithium battery and also acts as data transfer because you can transfer recordings between it and the computer. It also plays MP3 files as well. These have to be stored in a folder called Recordings, but it will play them just fine. So there you have it, MicroSpeak, a very simple but effective voice recorder.
Thank you, Julie. And if you love your tech news or you're maybe dabbling in technology, then there is a show for you. We call it Tech Talk, and I host it along with two other blind and partially sighted people called Sean Preece and Kerry Doyle. The show goes out Tuesdays at 1 on RNIB Connect Radio, and you can also get it on our Audioboom podcast. If you're on the podcast already, then all you have to do is search for Tech Talk, and you'll notice it. Some call it the yellow show. If you're partially sighted, you'll find it because it is a big yellow box with the words Tech Talk in it. That's how a lot of people now refer to the show. But yeah, Tech Talk you'll find on iTunes. You'll get it on Audioboom in all the usual places on podcast. And as I say, Tuesdays at 1 on RNIB Connect Radio. If you want to dabble in tech news, it's not for geeks, it's for everyone. Now, finally, this week, let's end as we began with our conversation on blind dating. One of the most common themes that comes out of this discussion is often the decision some of us make when it comes to choosing a partner. And that decision is often someone who is blind or sighted. And this can be quite a polarising topic, as a lot of you know. Here's a comment from one of our listeners who didn't want to be named on this topic.
I have a few things to say about this. First of all, I will start by telling you that I am totally blind. I graduated from high school in 1983, and I attended a junior college in my town where I lived. And as a young blind college student, I fit in very well. I had dates. I was in extracurricular activities in college. I had no problem finding a date as a woman in my 20s. But now, as I am older, I don't find it as easy to find a date. And I'm not sure exactly why that is. I will tell you, it is different dating and marrying a sighted person than it is dating a blind person. Sometimes sighted people that you either date or marry, they want you to become totally dependent on them. And they don't like it when you want to go do things for yourself, you know. They think they should always be there. And that's not always the case. But then on the other hand, there are the sighted people that really don't have any idea what a blind man or woman is capable of. And some blind people are more independent than others. But sometimes I think a sighted person is afraid to date a blind person because they're afraid that we are going to be a burden. So at this particular point in time, I think I prefer to date a blind person. I want to date somebody that's independent like me, I want to date someone that we complement each other, you know. And the only advantage to dating a sighted person, possibly, is the fact that they can drive and two blind people cannot, obviously. But if you're independent, you can make use of your public transportation and walking to get around. And sometimes I think, I don't know how to put this, I think sometimes that blind people are more sensitive when it comes to intimacy than sighted people. Nope, you can't give someone that glance from across the room. There's no way. A blind person bases a lot of how they choose someone on the way that person's voice sounds, on the type of attitude that they have, on the type of things that they have done with their life. You know, what kind of person are you? Are you outgoing? Do you like some of the same things as I do? What type of accomplishments have you made? What are your goals? But also in that, I mean, you can be attracted to somebody by the way they smell, by the way they talk to you, and by the way they touch you. And I don't know if a sighted person will understand this, but in my opinion, a blind person has a different touch than a sighted person does. I don't know if I answered your question very well, but yes, dating is harder, in my opinion, in the blind community. And that's what I think.
Well, that is your view, and you're welcome to it. Thank you for getting in touch, and thank you for sharing your thoughts. Quite a few polarizing opinions in there, I think it's fair to say, because, you know, being blind or partially sighted has many, many facets to it. But when it comes to choosing a partner, well, that's an interesting one. Do you go for someone who is blind, or do you go for someone who is sighted? Now, the obvious answer to that is probably, well, you go for the person you fall in love with. But does being blind or sighted make a difference in that initial part of dating? Well, it's an interesting topic. You are welcome to your view on it, and we'd love to hear it. Do email in. You can do that by emailing theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. That email address, theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. We're on Twitter as well, @RNIB Radio. You can use the hashtag to find us there. Just a reminder as well, our podcast is available. You can listen to all the back issues, and you can listen also to all the features as well. All the individual stories on the Weekly Connect Features podcast, all of that's available on iTunes, Audioboom, and on your favourite podcasting app. And if it's not, then tell us. As I say, keep in touch on the email, keep in touch on Twitter as well. It's your program, it's your voice. This is where you get to say what you like on the air on RNIB Connect Radio. And remember, if it's Mondays at 1 o'clock, it's the Weekly Connect. Bye.